This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to Forever Dog. You can listen to this podcast ad-free on Forever Dog Plus by signing up at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. And make sure to follow us on social at Forever Dog Team and check out all of our podcasts at foreverdogpodcasts.com. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Derek Atz.
And I'm Betsy Kenny.
And we're co-hosts of the new podcast, Done. It's a podcast about things we're done with.
Like, I'm weirdly done with fingers.
I'm done with you telling me you're getting bangs.
I am.
No, you're not.
Every week we have a guest on and they present to us what they're done with. It's going to be a very hot guest.
And then because our opinions are terrible, we call an expert to field the idea and give us their expert opinion on the topic.
Like when I hold in a fart and then like my body still makes the noise, but it's internal. Mm-hmm. So people knew you were holding it in. And it's the most disgusting thing. It's worse than shitting yourself.
Why did you bring that up just now?
I don't know.
Done premieres Friday, April 27th, and a new episode drops every Friday for the rest of eternity until the sun explodes.
So please subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on the Forever Dog Podcast Network, Apple iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater. This week, Jokester by Isaac Asimov, with Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaitai, and Muzan Zulfagari.
Hi, welcome to Public Domain Theater, the podcast of highbrow ratings and lowbrow commentary. I'm Lindsay Kaitai.
And I'm Kelly Nugent.
And today we have a wonderful guest with us. She's a writer and actor. You may know her from the improvised sci-fi podcast Mission to Zix, from At Home with Amy Sedaris. She's a UCB performer in both New York and LA, and she is on the Facebook animated show Human Kind Of. It's Muzan Zulfagari.
Hello, good to be here.
Oh,
thank
so good
you
to have
so
you.
Much.
Thank you.
Thank you for agreeing to read out loud a short story with
That's
us.
That's the only way I like to read out loud.
Mm.
I don't like to keep it in.
Mm-mm. Yeah, we're actors. Why
we're actors.
On earth wouldn't we act
utilize
everything?
Our talent.
Because yes. We're monsters.
Yes. Yeah, libraries were like, gather around. And they're like, please leave.
Every story word time. Is an audition.
The world is my teacher and I its student. I was saying before the podcast, and I just thought it would be fun to share it again, but when Muzan walked in, I was like, you look so familiar. And then I realized it was because I had seen you in a John Early short and screenshotted your face and then said, who is this girl who looks like me?
Oh boy, I'm sorry.
And why is she stealing my life?
And you pulled on a knife and said,
yeah.
We must go forward.
Yeah, and you concocted everything up until this point for this moment.
Yes.
So this is really what
and
I'm here
if
for.
You'll notice, I had etched your name into my arm
yeah,
with
I
a
see
knife
that.
So that
yeah.
I'd never forget it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're finally together, and now one of us must die and the other must live.
A third voice will not be here by the end of this podcast.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It'll be two of the same.
I will abstain from any kind of interaction that you guys are having.
And all of our listeners will have to figure out which one of us made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, fucking talented Mr. Ripley, one of the other of you.
Oh my gosh, Matt Damon.
Yum.
Is in that movie. That's all I have to say.
Matt Damon is, Matt Damon is so hot in that movie.
Jude Law is also in that movie. Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm just giving you the IMDb.
And there's like a...
Gwyneth Paltrow.
So here's the thing. I don't super remember that movie well, but I do remember that there's like a marble bust of a person that becomes bloody. Because it gets bonked. That's how he Ripley's someone, I think.
Is that a verb?
That's how he Ripley's someone.
He Ripley'd them. He wanted to be, he Ripley'd. It's Matt Damon wanted to Ripley someone else. Of
single white female.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a boy, you Ripley someone. If you're a girl, you single white female them.
Or goop them.
Or you goop them.
You make them become Gwyneth. I watched that movie so many times because I did go through a Matt Damon phase. And I loved... his version of My Funny Valentine, even though it's really creepy, but I was like, it's so cute. Matt Damon is singing.
Dreamy. This psychopath is so dreamy.
So dreamy.
I don't think I like picked up on how creepy that movie is also because of the Matt Damon effect.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, oh, but he just like, he like wants to be him. That's sad.
That's certainly a normal takeaway.
He just wants friends.
Yeah. But then and then when he killed him, I was like, oh. what's this? There's not a line.
Oopsie daisy. He killed him.
Speaking of. I'm going to segue this.
Speaking of books, which this podcast is about, okay. I'm actually reading Talented Mr. Ripley.
Wait, you really are?
Oh, yeah. You talked to me about that. Yeah. We talked about that while crossing the street while leaving the last bookstore.
Uh-huh. It's very good. And the movie is a really good adaptation of it.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah. Who wrote it?
An author named Patricia Highsmith.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Cool. It was Jude Law.
An author by the name of Jude Law. Have you heard of him?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she's cool. She also wrote the book that Carol is based on, The Price of Salt.
Under a different name. Writer.
Mm-hmm. She good. I gotta read her stuff.
Yeah.
She's good. I highly recommend.
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Cool. Is she still alive?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because it's like, this was like in the 50s?
Her work, yeah.
Maybe 60s?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's very cool that there was a female, crime author.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool that there was a female working.
Yeah. And also.
In general.
With the fact that her books are so progressive, too. Like, both Carol and Talented Mr. Ripley deal with, same-sex attraction.
Like, identity. And, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, guys, get out there and read that.
Damn. Yeah.
But speaking of reading,
are you a big reader?
I try to be. I think I'm a better reader in New York because there's more reasons to there's subways and I have a hard time.
There's more time
carving time because I feel so much guilt about not working on something. I asked a friend recently, how do you find time to read here?
You make a podcast where you have to do it.
Right? Yeah. And I also am in a book club in New York.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And so it's with a bunch of other funny people, which an hour and a half is based on the book. And then 5 hours is all gossip.
Nice.
Yeah. Kind of like this podcast.
But it's made me give me a deadline to make sure I read because of or else I'll feel I need a deadline in my life. I need someone to look down upon me.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because now we have read at least a book a week since July 2016.
Damn.
And 85% of them are utter garbage.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Just because of the genre we chose. So I've read so many books I didn't want to read.
Do you actually finish them or do you at any point be like, I'll just go online and get the
plot points? No, we read the whole thing. Sometimes I'll do a heavy skim. Like when we did 50 Shades of Grey. I didn't read any of those emails. I was like, this is so boring. Skip.
There are a lot of emails in that book.
So many boring emails.
It's very weird.
One of my book clubs, one time we were reading East of Eden. So John Steinbeck, he loves the word. So hefty.
Mm-hmm.
I should have known. I knew Steinbeck was a writer who loved the words. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, an ebook and I really went through it really fast. And I was like, damn, Steinbeck gets to the point. This is a great book. It's not that many words. And then I went to book club and I realized everyone had this a 700-page book. And I, not realizing the cover page was abridged. So someone took the beginning paragraph and the middle and last and got rid of all the descriptions that Steinbeck does. this? And I was just like, Steinbeck is just plot, 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 plot.
Oh my God.
Like, we are right. I love this book. Steinbeck knows.
I've never heard of an abridged book before.
Yeah, I probably,
unless it was like by the author.
No. That is so fun. Yeah. Well, you know what? Of all authors to do it too.
Yeah.
Steinbeck for
sure. I have only read Stephen King's full book of The Stand, and I knew that it was released heavily edited down, and I love The Stand, and so I wanted to know, you know, what the heavily edited copy looked like. So I recently bought an old copy published in like 1978, and holy shit, there are so many things missing, just like so much color taken out of the story. I haven't like gotten too far into it, but the whole first chapter that I'm used to being there is gone. The total explanation of like where the virus came from is gone.
Oh.
Like the whole tale of like the one guy managing to escape the center where the virus was created, getting out with his family, and then just like giving it to absolutely everybody on the car drive.
Okay.
And it's gone. It was very weird. I also got it because I was curious as to whether it used the N-word.
Does it?
It does.
God damn it.
Because in the newer book, I think it is changed to Negro. And I was like, there ain't no way that this isn't
Stephen
full N-word.
Stephen King did this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
heavily.
Like,
okay.
Heavily.
He is against racists. He does not portray them in a good light.
Sure.
But I don't need to read that word.
Sure,
so.
Sure.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Especially because it's like, you know, Stephen King's like, it's in his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he grew up in Maine. He knows how people talk. He knows how horrible white people talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of, I'm just
horrible
segueing.
White people.
Here's the thing.
No.
Speaking of cool. The people's lives, mm-hmm. So we're reading a book, or short story by Isaac Asimov called The Jokester. And what do you guys know about Isaac Asimov? Do you want to learn a little bit about him?
Yeah, I've never heard of the name.
Okay.
Don't know anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Sci-fi.
Awesome.
Sci-fi guy. He wrote a lot. So he was born in 1920. I got like dyslexia for a second and thought he died in 1929.
Damn. This like 9-year old.
Prolific.
So good.
Yeah.
Okay.
He got a lot done in his 9 years on Earth, which makes me very embarrassed about how little I have.
He was a professor of biochem at Boston U, and he was a prolific writer. He mostly wrote hard sci-fi, which is a category of sci-fi characterized by emphasis on scientific accuracy. He was considered one of the big three science fiction writers during his lifetime, along with Robert A. Heinlein and Arthur C. Clarke. His output is legendary. He wrote and edited more than 500 books.
What?
And,
no. Shut your damn
and
face.
And an estimated 90,000 letters/postcards. His books.
Huh? Who's counting his postcards?
Brett. Brett is counting his postcards.
Brett, why did you read all of his postcards?
Brett went to the estate of Isaac Asimov.
What? Do they have pictures? Like, is it fun postcards? Are they all different from one another? Or are they hard science postcards?
Here's what I imagine. They're like, postcards. Still at Boston U and teaching. Miss you.
I was
going to
say,
like, send.
Every single
teaching?
One is like, wish you were here.
Yeah.
How could he teach?
He doesn't sound like he's a
he
teacher.
He doesn't have time.
Yeah. He's like that lazy teacher that's like, listen, we all know I got tenure. I'm just here for a hot second.
Yeah.
Everyone just read page, what that, bye.
His books have been published in 9 of 10 of the major categories of the Dewey Decimal System.
That's a thing.
What?
If yeah. you count books,
that's very
good
confused.
For you. If he counts books he edited, he is responsible for books in all 10 categories. So here's the categories to give you some ideas.
Okay.
Generalities, philosophy, religion, social sciences, language.
Oh, I get it.
Pure sciences, applied sciences and technology, arts, literature, and history and geography.
Can I stop you there? Just like knowing only this much about him, I imagine he's like a guy with a huge ego. He tells this to everybody at any dinner party.
You know what? Here's the thing.
He's like, you know what, baby? 9 out of 10 of the Dewey Decimal.
He's
categories.
Like, are you familiar with the
Dewey Decimal System?
Okay.
Have I made you wet yet?
Oh, God. You know what he is? Okay. So,
have I made you
wet
science?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it, baby.
That's it.
Okay. So, you're right. I think he probably is really annoying. And I think he's one of those people who, like, if he existed now, would post, like, those Instagram posts that are, like, what lunch break? fuel with coffee, sleep never, hustle always. Ugh. Like those types of people.
And it's a selfie of him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a selfie of him like in a BMW, but like also with like a dumbbell in his arm.
He would be that plus what's his face? Neil deGrasse Tyson. Mm.
Yeah.
Constantly correcting.
He'd be on Twitter 24/7.
Oh, absolutely. Here's the thing. You know what it would be instead of 90,000 letters and postcards?
Ugh, yep.
100 million tweets.
100 million, million tweets. Million.
So you want to know what his secret is?
Yeah.
Besides hustle?
Coffee.
Asimov wrote every day, whether or not he felt like it. He started his workday between 9:30 and 10. He only took small breaks and worked deep into the night. Typed over 90 words a minute on his electric typewriter with a backup in case it broke. He went to bed at 10 or 11, tried to hone his sleeping mind to produce ideas and characters in his dreams that he could then use for the next day. Oh, God, he's annoying. He scoffed at the idea of writer's block.
Oh, really? Okay. You. Oh, you're right. So special. Look at you. You always have ideas.
As if everything he wrote was any good.
Wait, was he in a relationship? Was he married? What's his deal?
Oh, God, I feel bad for whoever was involved
with
him.
I want to know what his fucking Tinder profile looks like.
Oh, boy. Oh, God.
It's like him in that BMW. Yes. Getting swole.
Yeah. getting swole. Hustle. He's like, I hustle.
Hustle, loyalty, respect the craft.
Yes. He preferred a completely unembellished style of writing. His characters are simple. His dialogue functional.
Maybe he did the abridgment of East of Eden.
I think so.
Oh, no. Do you want to hear a quote?
Yes.
From him?
Absolutely.
I guess I'm prolific because I have a simple and straightforward style.
Really? Oh, look at you. Look at this guy. He loves himself.
I think he's a lot more robotic though, because
I think he's super robotic.
I think I'm prolific. That's absolutely cool.
I was obsessed with these series of like live action shorts for kids called Unicorn Tales. And they were like loose retellings of fairy tales. And he introduced the one that was like a loose retelling of The Wizard of Oz. And
this guy did?
Yeah, oh. Isaac Asimov. Because they turned it into kind of a sci-fi thing. So it was like time travel instead of to another land, starring Tisha Campbell with just so many songs. And he introduces, he's like, what if the Wizard of Oz, instead of a tin man, it was a robot. And instead of a wizard, it was an evil dictator. And instead of a this, it was a that. But then you wouldn't really have the Wizard of Oz. You'd have the Magnificent Major. And so you shall.
Okay.
And that was the introduction.
Oh, my God.
It's like, who wrote this? I hope not you.
Yeah. He didn't care about critics, so he would not care that we just laughed at him.
I absolutely believe that.
I mean, yeah. He says he doesn't care.
I guess I maybe don't care.
But, like, you know, at night, he's, like, pumping at his electric
at
whatever
typewriter.
At that
90 words a minute, man.
Yeah.
He's like, ugh. He reaches 100 every time he gets mad.
His girlfriend or boyfriend's like, honey, come back to bed. He's like, no, I cannot.
Yeah, he's like, the critics. And they're like, I thought you didn't care. And he's like, you shut up.
Go into your room.
Your separate room. So he says, many authors avoid such simplicity in their writing because they want to appear sophisticated. They also use impenetrable prose in order to impress critics with their deep ideas. He believed that flowery language, useless adverbs, and nonsensical metaphors would only clutter up his writing and make it more of a chore for the reader. Actually, okay. I respect him for that. Yeah.
Okay, well. Right.
Okay, last thing. Ready? This is his quote.
Okay.
I made up my mind long ago to follow one cardinal rule in all my writing. To be clear, I would write merely clearly.
Is he giggling at
all? And then he giggles.
And then he went 5 minutes of giggling. And in this way, establish a warm relationship between myself and my readers. And the professional critics, well, they can do whatever they wish. Feel like he's such a robot. He was like, write clearly, create friendship with readers. Warm relationship.
Yeah, he sounds like an AI bot from the past.
He writes a lot about robots.
So he, I think himself, is an AI bot.
He wrote iRobot, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah. And him being like,
this adds up.
Okay, respect.
Oh, nice. All right, you ready to get into this thing?
Wait, so what are, because I probably know him, but I didn't know his name. What are his major works?
iRobot. He also wrote this book called Pebble in the Sky, which I remember liking.
Okay.
Which was like, it was actually a pretty interesting idea where it was like, it's in this distant future after humans have like started colonizing other planets. And Earth is now just this, like, because of nuclear war, like, is heavily radiated and only parts of it are populated. And all the records of, like, where humans came from have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you're from Earth, you're considered, like, ugh, like, gross.
No, thank you.
And so no one knows that humans originated from Earth. And so this is, like, far, far, far in the future. Then, like, this guy... who is 60? That's his age.
Ugh,
okay. Ugh, 60.
Ew.
Gross.
No, yeah. He's 60. He somehow gets like transported to that time. I don't really remember how, like through a wormhole or something. And people are put to like they're euthanized at like 50,
mm-hmm.
and so he has to like keep it secret that he's 60.
Yeah.
And then they do some kind of surgery on him, which is like kind of a Flowers for Algernon thing where he gets really smart. And I don't really get how that like fits in with the like the general mythos and like all that.
Like, yeah. Themes and stuff.
Because it seems like there's a lot going on in this book. But it's also short because he is concise. But I never remember how that book ends. And I've read it like 8 times. Do not remember how it ends.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's...
But it seems interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And warm for the audience.
Yeah. Well, listen, as I was reading, I was like, I'm a little toasty. I'm going to take off my sweater.
Yeah. We all took an article of clothing off.
So this...
Let's get into it.
...is called Jokester. I wonder if this is going to be his attempt to be funny.
I don't know.
I don't remember if he's funny.
Is that when you said, and today, the Jokester, and I was like, is that how she's introducing Mujan?
I know. I was like, wow. I guess I come into the room and crack jokes and
weird choice of words.
I'm like the person that just can't turn it off.
Yeah. Goofhound.
Goofhound.
And Goofhound Mujan.
Oh my God.
I'll take it.
Oh, and for what it's worth, this is illustrated by Engel.
Is that an at? Instagram handle?
Yeah.
At Angle.
It's illustrated by Ansel Elgort, the current actor.
Good for him.
Oh, yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. The current actor.
The current actor.
But previously.
Future Republican senator. Saying it right
past
now.
Past illustrator, future Republican senator.
Okay.
All right. You guys ready for this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Noel Meyerhoff consulted the list he had prepared and chose which item was to be first. As usual, he relied mainly on intuition. He was dwarfed by the machine he faced, though only the smallest portion of the latter was in view. That didn't matter. He spoke with the offhand confidence of one who thoroughly knew he was master. Johnson, he said, came home unexpectedly from a business trip to find his wife in the arms of his best friend. He staggered back and said, Max, I'm married to the lady, so I have to. But why you?
Johnson is like a good basic name.
Yeah, it is a good. And it's a name that has not been used
Johnson.
Recently.
Yeah.
For like, you know, like people now I think use like Joe or something or sure. John Johnson.
Well, I'm assuming that he's calling his friend by his last name.
Oh.
You dumb.
Idiot.
Stupid Kelly.
Meyerhoff thought, okay, let that trickle down into its guts and gurgle about a bit. And a voice behind him said, hey.
You up? I don't know where
I'm
we
reading
are
this like
or
a porn.
What is what right now.
Hey.
Yeah.
Meyerhoff erased the sound of that monosyllable and put the circuit he was using into neutral. He whirled and said, I'm working. Don't you knock?
Yeah. Hey, makes sense.
Yeah. Knock.
Yeah, knock.
Fair.
He did not smile as he customarily did in greeting Timothy Whistler, a senior analyst with whom he dealt as often as with any.
Where'd Johnson go?
Yeah, what about...
Who's... What?
You know what? I think he...
What is here's happening?
What I, here's what I think. Here's what I think. I think he... I think he, Noel Meyerhoff,
yes.
okay. said the joke to the
thing. So the jokester has begun.
Yeah, I think he's joking.
Oh.
He said the joke to the machine.
Or.
And he's working.
Or did the machine say the joke to him?
Well.
Is he making a robot that knows what humor is?
I think he's trying to teach it. Because he's, so Noel.
Oh.
Noel is consulting the list and he's working.
Uh-huh.
And then it just says he. And it says Johnson, he said.
You know, for a man who believes he writes concise and clearly, we're already lost. Very lost.
Very lost.
That happens with a lot of the stories we read where like three sentences in, I'm like, you got to give more than this.
Well, authors,
I don't know what's happening yet.
They all
yet.
Love themselves so much. Yeah. Like, I need to make it different and big.
Yeah. Or it's like they're all improvisers and they're like, you start in the middle of the scene, right?
He frowned as he would have for an interruption by a stranger, wrinkling his thin face into a distortion that seemed to extend to his hair, rumpling it more than ever. Whistler shrugged. He wore his white lab coat with his fists pressing down within its pockets, increasing it into tense vertical lines. I knocked. You didn't answer. The operation signal wasn't on. Meyerhoff grunted. It wasn't on at that. I'm not sure what that sentence means. He'd been thinking about this new project too intensely, and he was forgetting little details. And yet he could scarcely blame himself for that. This thing was important. He didn't know why it was, of course.
What is this?
I think it's the machine.
The jokester machine.
The machine that he's telling jokes to.
Okay, great, great. Cool.
I think.
Oh, is that the one Dewey Decimal category that he didn't fall into? Humor?
Humor.
He's not a humorist.
He's trying to teach himself.
The machine's name was Isaac.
What is left?
This thing was important. He didn't know why it was, of course. Grandmasters rarely did. That's what made them grandmasters, the fact that they were beyond reason. How else could the human mind keep up with that 10-mile-long lump of solidified reason that men called Multivac, the most complex computer ever built? Meyerhoff said, I am working. Is there something important on your mind? Nothing that can't be postponed. There are a few holes in the answer on the hyperspatial. Whistler did a double take, and his face took on a rueful look of uncertainty. Working? Yes, what about it? But he looked around, staring into the crannies of the shallow room that faced the banks upon banks of relays that formed a small portion of Multivac. There isn't anyone here at that. He's saying at that a lot.
What? Yeah, he's also talking about the man's face, which is great. I like to get visual images. But like, it a twists, lot. It yeah, turns, it gets...
contortions. Who said there was or should be?
What?
You were telling one of your jokes, weren't you? And? Whistler forced a smile. Don't tell me you were telling a joke to a Multivac.
Oh, shit.
Oh, he's not allowed.
Oh, shit. Meyerhoff stiffened. Why not? Were you? Yes. Why? Meyerhoff stared the other down. I don't have to account to you or to anyone.
And you know Cheryl left me.
I'm lonely.
And wearing a diaper to work.
Why? And this you bring up? No one's brought up the diaper yet.
Diaper's just there, twisting and turning.
Twisting and turning.
His diaper twisted in confusion.
In vertical lines.
It's now canon.
Good Lord, of course not. I was curious, that's all. But then if you're working, I'll leave. He looked about once more, frowning. Do so, said Meyerhoff. His eyes followed the other out, and then he activated the operation signal with a savage punch of his finger. He strode the length of the room and back, getting himself in hand. Damn Whistler. Damn them all. Because he didn't bother to hold to those technicians, analysts, and mechanics at the proper social distance, because he treated them as though they, too, were creative artists. They took all kinds of liberties. He thought grimly. They can't even tell jokes decently.
He does not have a good work environment.
Here's the thing. He needs a hobby.
He does.
He needs outside of work.
After Cheryl left him, you know, what is he going to do?
Yeah, not much.
He threw himself head over heels into the diaper thing.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing is this guy, he started taking a few classes at UCB.
Yes.
He doesn't want to be doing this anymore. Yeah, but he also wants to become an actor.
He's not good, though, because he keeps saying, I have to tell jokes. And everyone's like, please don't do that.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. And he's like, oh, but I want to make sure all my jokes land.
But the thing about him is he gets one good note.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And that fucks him up.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to become a comedian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The jokester.
He did it well once, and now
that's it.
Yep.
He's chasing
that's it.
That high.
Yep.
He's like, I'm going to become the next Dane Cook. Take that, Cheryl.
She's like, I'm leaving.
And instantly, that brought him back to the task at hand. He sat down again. Devil take them all. He threw the proper Multivac circuit back into operation and said, The ship's steward stopped at the rail of the liner during a particularly rough ocean crossing and gazed compassionately at the man whose slumped position over the rail and whose intensity of gaze towards the depths betokened all too well the ravages of seasickness.
Okay.
Wait,
that, first of all, sorry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. If that is a joke, all three of us that's went, the beginning of a joke. Hub, 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 hub,
hub. Is that the beginning of
that's
a joke?
That's the beginning of a joke.
Okay. Here's
the thing. Just be easy.
Yeah.
Be easy.
Also, be original. I've heard that on Twitter 1,000 times.
Look, I get we all want to get our takes out right away.
Yeah. We don't need all to have a hot take on whatever that was.
Yeah. Stop trying to chase the current event.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can sit one out.
You know what?
You can sit one out. It's fine.
You can sit it out.
Nobody is at home waiting for Isaac's take.
Literally, no one's at home.
Literally zero people.
Okay, what's his joke? Come on.
Gently, the steward patted the man's shoulder. Cheer up, sir, he murmured. I know it seems bad, but really, you know, nobody ever dies of seasickness. The afflicted gentleman lifted his greenish, tortured face to his comforter and gasped in hoarse accents. What? Don't say that, man. For heaven's sake, don't say that. It's only the hope of dying that's keeping me alive.
Okay.
I get it.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
The thing is, I like sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love sci-fi.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you're just saying nonsense, made up things with zero context, I don't know what is happening in the story.
Well, he's all about hard science, right? So it's all just
it's
facts.
All, yeah, it's all like computers
and shit.
It's all
just made up facts far. It's like, okay, so we've got a machine.
Yeah.
The multibat.
We've got a couple of guys.
Yeah. He's working on the multibat.
The one guy is trying to tell it. Jokes.
Yeah.
Someone tells him you can't do that. When you tell someone to not do something, they're going to do
it. He's going to do it even more.
Yeah.
It's like, don't think of a purple rhino or elephant or whatever that saying
thinking
is.
Thinking about it right now.
There you go.
Thinking of both.
I apologize.
That's fine. Timothy Whistler, a bit preoccupied, nevertheless smiled and nodded as he passed the secretary's desk. She smiled back at him. Here, he thought, was an archaic item in his computer-ridden world of the 21st century. A human secretary. All right, you know what? Don't say item.
Yeah, don't.
That's a person.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I mean, it's true. These jobs will be automated.
Mm-hmm.
This is an amazing foreshadowing by him.
Mm-hmm.
So hurrah. But yeah, don't call him item.
Yeah, don't call him that.
Call it human who will be item.
Yeah.
I mean, be respectful
be
in
respectful.
That way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good day to you, human who will be item.
Happy human who will be item day. Here's a flower.
Did you notice on the calendar?
But then, perhaps it was natural that such an institution should survive here in the very citadel of computerdom, in the gigantic world corporation that handled Multivac. When, with Multivac filling the horizons, lesser computers for trivial tasks would have been in poor taste. Whistler stepped into Abram Trask's office. What a name. Abram Trask.
I thought that was in the
story. Wait, is that not in the
story? No, that's Kelly.
Oh, okay.
That Abram is Trask.
Name. Yeah.
That government official paused in his careful task of lighting a pipe. Oh, exactly what I'm imagining. His dark eyes flicked in Whistler's direction and his beaked nose stood out sharply and prominently against the rectangle of window behind him.
I don't know why I'm imagining he's a rectangular man.
Me
he
too.
He has like a rectangle face, like rectangle hands.
He looks like the general. Like a
triangle
General now. That guy.
Also, we've had 50 characters at this point, yes. right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
just checking.
And the one who doesn't have a name, the woman.
Yep, yep, yep.
She has a name. Secretary.
Yeah,
secretary.
Right, so item, yeah. secretary.
Item.
Yeah,
item.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Item has a name, secretary.
Oh, there, Whistler. Sit down, sit down. Whistler did so. I think we've got a problem, Trask. Trask half smiled. Not a technical one, I hope. I'm just an innocent politician. It was one of his favorite phrases. It involves Meyerhoff. Trask sat down instantly and looked acutely miserable. Are you sure? Reasonably sure.
We should never have hired that UCB troop to do that corporate improv class with us.
It's really inspired us to stop working.
Whistler understood the other's sudden unhappiness well. Trask was the government official in charge of the Division of Computers and Automation of the Department of the Interior. Wow, that is a phrase.
Can you say that again?
Trask was the government official
yes.
in charge of the Division of Computers.
So computers. Yes.
And Automation. So, I'm sorry. Division of Computers and Automation.
Okay.
Of the Department of the Interior.
Okay. So actually, by the time we've gotten to the end, the interior becomes the main designation.
So, yes. So just.
And then below that is
computers.
Division of so Computers
he's
and
the
Automation.
So the IT guy for like.
For like the Department of the Interior.
Yeah, for like
the
United HR. States. Oh, that. I'm just going to say HR.
The HR of the United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
For what is a nation, but it's human resources.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We're not a place where a people.
Thank you. Yeah.
He was expected to deal with matters of policy involving the human satellites of Multivac, just as those technically trained satellites were expected to deal with Multivac itself. But a Grand Master was more than just a satellite.
That's right.
More even than just a human.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You stand up
Tell
for yourself.
Tell it to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Preach.
Early in the history of Multivac, it had become apparent that there was one big bottleneck. The questioning procedure. Multivac could answer the problems of humanity, all the problems, if it were asked meaningful questions. But as knowledge accumulated at an ever faster rate, it became ever more difficult to locate those meaningful questions. Reason alone wouldn't do. What was needed was a rare type of intuition, the same faculty of mind, only fantastically intensified, that made a grandmaster at chess.
Okay.
Chess became involved.
Chess is not an intuitive game, is it?
It's also not of computing or not. I guess you can totally automate chess. There's chess games.
Yeah, you can play against the computers in chess.
Question, who's talking right now?
I think...
Whose point of view are we in?
Where are we?
Here we are. Here's it. We are...
I like it. I just don't know what's happening.
We are in... Whistler's mind.
We're with Whistler right now.
He's thinking about like, oh, I get why Trask is freaking out because blah, 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 blah.
We left Meyerhoff behind.
Meyerhoff's not there anymore.
And Johnson was just a character in a joke?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, let me start off my book real funny.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to get them on my good side.
Yeah.
Hilarious joke. Yeah.
I think we're due to switch. Okay. I think I know how he was so prolific is that he didn't worry about whether anything was happening or you were bored.
Yes.
Yeah.
A
mind. Okay. And it continues. A mind was needed of the sort that could see through the quadrillions of chess patterns to find the one best move and do it in a matter of minutes. Trask moved restlessly. What's Meyerhoff been doing? Well, he's introduced a line of questioning that I find disturbing.
Jokes.
I think so. I think he doesn't like the jokes.
I think so. Except.
So his job is to ask questions to the computer.
So he's moved on to asking jokes. He thinks that's the key, I believe.
I think he thinks that's the key. To make the computer
have a reaction.
Why are they doing this? Why are they asking the computers questions?
Because I believe in automation job. Mm-hmm, so you're training the robot to get smarter and smarter and smarter.
So but that it can start thinking.
Purpose?
Right.
Yes. Where are we? What is the company about?
Yes,
what's the
exactly.
evilness?
Well, and if he's reporting to the government.
I think that they have reached a point where the computer, the computer's the he now. Mm-hmm. The computer has stopped progressing.
Right. And so he's like, where to take it?
And so they're like, we've got to bump it to the next level.
Okay.
We've got to make it think outside the box mm-hmm. now. Perhaps jokes are the way to go.
Mm-hmm. That's true. When you're in a bad date and things aren't going well, you turn towards humor mm-hmm. because that's just how you're, that's just how you can get someone's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
I think.
Okay. I don't know.
That's how I date.
Okay.
Have you ever seen two people hanging out on a date? And it's just like no one laughs the whole time. Have you ever seen that?
No, I don't watch other people's dates.
I love watching other people.
Really? I don't.
Yeah, I watch other people all the time.
I'm too self-involved for that.
Really? Yeah. I just tune out of the person I'm sitting with so that I can listen to other people.
And then you become the date that's not laughing.
I know. And then others, that maybe that's what they're doing. They're listening to our date.
Oh, no.
I did once sit next to a couple, an elderly couple at like Starbucks and Brooklyn or something, and it was, seemed like it was going well because that you can hear everything at that cafe, and he got angry at her at one point because she didn't know who Howard Zinn was, and like the date ended, and they were like in their 80s or 70s or something. Like, it's like you finally found someone who, like, she just didn't know Howard Zinn. She had another life, and that's what, that's the thing that, like, he just like immediately was like, I have to go.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Howard Zinn was the 80-year-old deal breaker?
Yeah, it's a deal breaker for 80-year-olds.
Wow.
Who knew? Word to the wise. Everybody out there.
Watch it.
When you're getting,
singles.
Yeah, singles. Get up it's on your tough. History on the
Get
world.
Up on
Come
your
on.
Zen. Get up on your liberal history. Trask moved restlessly. What has Meyerhoff been doing? He's introduced a line of questioning that I find disturbing.
Yes.
Oh, come on, Whistler. Is that all? You can't stop a grandmaster from going through any line of questioning he chooses. Neither you nor I are equipped to judge the worth of his questions. You know that. I know you know that. You know, and I know. And we know, and I know that you know.
Human connection.
And woman comes in. I know too. Get out of here, secretary.
This is a future story, but I can't even foresee that women would be involved in this.
Nope.
I do, of course, but I also know Meyerhoff. Have you ever met him socially? Good Lord, no.
Ooh, shade.
He's like, that fucking loser.
Does anyone meet any grandmaster socially?
Oh, poor Isaac. No. This is about him.
Burn.
Yeah.
This is about him.
Poor guy.
Don't take that attitude, Trask. They're human and they're to be pitied.
Oh, no. Isaac, you're really showing your cards right now. Yeah. Poor boy.
That's sad.
There's like teardrops on his little. Yeah.
These are the critics. This is what they feel about me.
We'll meet you in a bar socially.
Please hang out.
Have you ever thought what it must be like to be a grandmaster? To know there are only some 12 like you in the world? To know that only one or two come up per generation? That the world depends on you? That 1,000 mathematicians, logicians, and
magicians and goditions
and strategicians, psychologists and physical scientists wait on you?
What?
Trask shrugged and muttered, Good Lord, I'd feel like king of the world. I don't think you would, said the senior analyst impatiently. They feel kings of nothing. Mm. They have no equals to talk to, no sensation of belonging. Listen, Meyerhoff never misses a chance to get together with the boys. He isn't married, naturally. Wow, they are so mean.
They're being so mean about him.
They're so naturally.
I'm so mean about Isaac.
Oh, wow. Poor Isaac. One of these is going to accidentally refer to him as Isaac.
Yeah. And then he doesn't cry because, like, whoops, no, I didn't mean that. I meant definitely the
I'm using
other
a typewriter. I can't backspace.
I ran out of whiteout. He isn't married, naturally. He doesn't drink. He has no natural social touch. Oh. Yet he forces himself into company because he must.
Oh,
and do you
God.
Know what he
trying.
Does?
Yeah. At least he's trying.
Yeah, he's not like in his apartment alone. He's going out there. Honestly, Team Isaac.
Yeah, and you know what? This is only like making people not want to try and be social. Because they're like, oh, well, if I try, there's like two guys talking about me like this.
I mean, that's true.
It is true because like usually 20 minutes leading up to us recording is me and Lindsay being like, did you fucking see it? Nah.
And then as soon as I leave, I know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be like, am I banging on?
No. We already promised you that we would be
recording
that for
you.
Okay. Oh, thank you so much.
And sending it to you as an audio file.
Yay.
Yeah. You guys, it's about to take a twist.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Stop.
Do you know what he does when he gets together with us? And that's at least once a week? I haven't the least idea, said the government man.
Hey, at least he doesn't have a name. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. To the government man. This is all new to me.
Wait, is this a new character that just appeared?
No,
he's just calling
government
him
calling Trask.
I would just it's love stupid. If there was just government man.
There's a government
like
man,
a cigarette smoking
there.
Man in the yes. room.
Yes, just in the corner. I haven't an idea.
He's a jokester.
The title.
Wait, the title. So he's the jokester.
Meyerhoff is the jokester.
Oh my god. Oh man.
He's a jokester.
What?
He tells jokes. Good ones.
He's good.
Welcome to the twist. He's terrific. He can take any story, however old and dull, and make it sound good. It's the way he tells it. He has flair.
Flair.
I see. Well, good or bad. These jokes are important to him. Whistler put both elbows on Trask's desk, bit at a thumbnail.
On Trask's face.
Massaging gently the caresses.
You have a knot in your shoulder. Both elbows on Trask's desk, bit at a thumbnail, and stared into the air.
What?
What is he
Wait,
sucking
I'm sorry.
At him
try that out.
Both, all right, elbows down.
But are you sucking the air as your elbows are down?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And...
You're a baby.
Wait, so hold on.
I'm a baby. Yeah,
you're being a baby on, you're facing somebody, like you're not sitting at the table.
This
you're
is
standing.
A very
oh,
unnatural
so he's,
pose.
Oh, so he's kneeling over.
No, so he's like bent over.
Yeah.
And yeah. the other guy is sitting at the desk, so
okay,
they're close.
Okay. But it,
Biting thumbnail.
Is thumbnail.
This is a
and
little
looking
bit seductive.
Up.
Yeah, this is like a come fuck me, I'm a baby pose.
Yeah,
this is
it's a fuckable baby. Government man.
No government man. Do oh. you know what he did? I'll kill you if you're good to me.
Such an unnatural pose. Okay.
Yeah, no, he is like contorted.
He puts his face on the floor, his hand in the air.
And clapped his
and
feet
with his
three times.
Free ear. He flapped it on his eyebrow. He's different. He knows he's different, and these jokes are the one way he feels he can get the rest of us ordinary schmoes to accept him. We laugh, we howl, we clap him on the back, and even forget he's a grandmaster. It's the only hold he has on the rest of us.
I feel like this is talking about me.
Yeah.
Or like comedians.
Yeah, where it's like,
this
ugh.
Is all we have like, to connect with people.
They literally don't know how to talk to you unless they're doing a bit.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't
yeah.
know who he is.
Any elevator at the UCB, this is. They're a bunch of grandmasters. Just yeah. like any silence they can't take, they just do bit, bit, bit.
Hi, we're the grandmasters and we just need one oh, word God. To get started.
Not food.
This is all interesting. I didn't know you were such a psychologist. Still.
Say psycho.
Where is this lead?
Psycho.
I didn't know you were such a psycho.
Oh.
Just this. What do you suppose happens if Meyerhoff runs out of jokes? This
oh.
is a weird concern
you
to
know,
go
that
to
is a weird concern
with.
Because
like
that's not
boss,
a
boss listen boss
also like you
Meyerhoff
wake, yeah
he's gonna run out of jokes
you
as soon as
up,
he does we're all dead
you wake up one day and you're like there are no more jokes left to
well,
say
there are only 100
so you he's told 87
yeah
I went to every bookshop and I looked for jokes and I've already done them all the jokes and I've done them well
oh, he does them well
what the government
what?
Man stared blankly if he starts repeating himself is if his audience starts laughing less heartily or stops laughing altogether
mm.
it's his only hold on our approval without it he'll be alone and then what would happen to him this is so fucking weird what is this viewpoint
it is a weird
what
the jokester,
this?
The loneliest man in the room.
Well, it does like kind of reflect like, you know how some people have this thought where like if you just make a little throwaway joke or you're like doing a bit
mm-hmm.
and then some like certain people will be like, where did you read that? Or like, where did you find? Like, why? How could you think of that?
That's so random.
Yeah. And then like, I feel like it's like that where people are like, well, it has to exist somewhere else. It can't just be like a,
right.
a weird thing you'd say.
Yeah.
It has to come from something.
This guy does seem to think there are a limited
a finite
number.
Yeah.
There are like, there's like, yeah, there are.
He's like,
yeah.
Well, there can only be so, like, how does this guy get his ideas? He probably goes home and he writes them down.
Yeah.
And then eventually it's going to dry up.
Yeah.
Like, there's no such thing as inspiration because yeah. I never feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's only 5 airplane jokes, and 6 jokes about food, and 10 about women.
And there's only 2 women in the world. Well, has he started repeating himself? Not as far as I know, but I think he thinks he has.
Interesting.
Why do you say that? Because I've heard him telling jokes to Multivac.
Oh, no.
No.
Accidentally. I walked in on him and he threw me out. He was savage. He's usually good-natured enough, and I consider it a bad sign that he was so upset at the intrusion. But the fact remains that he was telling a joke to Multivac, and I'm convinced if it was one of a series. But why? Whistler shrugged and rubbed a hand fiercely across his chin. He just punched himself in the face.
Oh.
Is he still in that position?
No.
Wait, hold on.
It didn't say he got out of it, so I have to assume so.
Well, yeah, no, because if we bothered hearing about him going into it,
we would have heard about him so coming out of it.
He thooped his thumb out of his mouth.
Yes.
Whenever I read anything, I always assume that until I am told otherwise, they're exactly as they were.
Yeah, no, they don't move. Mm-hmm.
Also,
static.
Can I just stop here? These people are creating way too much drama.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
nothing's drama. Going on in this office.
Nothing.
This is the thing. They have nothing going on.
I realize now that I missed a line.
Oh,
God.
They're saying, we can't. So after all, Trask, he's one of the dozen men mankind can't do without. We can't let anything happen to him. I don't just mean physical things. We can't even let him get too unhappy. Who knows how that might affect his intuition.
I see. So they think he's going crazy.
They think he's going to lose his connection to others and get really upset and despondent and won't be able to work anymore. But I think that he knows teaching the computer jokes is going to elevate
the computer.
The computer's processing ability.
This guy goes, he knows nothing about the comedy scene.
This is why he's not a grandmaster, and he's not, that team's been around forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like a new student. I'm going to stop with the improv comparisons. Whistler shrugged and rubbed a hand fiercely across his chin. I have thought about that. I think he's trying to build up a store of jokes in Multivac memory banks in order to get back new variations. Oh, well, if you get it, why are you being so crazy? He's planning a mechanical jokester.
Yay!
So that he can have an infinite number of jokes at hand and never fear.
He thinks he's
programming the machine to come up with AI jokes for him for parties.
So he, okay, this guy keeps
amazing.
This guy keeps like coming right up to what it is and then like sidestep and like taking a left turn.
There's nothing else. Like, why are they, like, I don't know. Like, let him do it. He's having fun.
That the Grandmasters are all just pretty basic human beings.
Yeah.
And then these guys are just fucking idiots.
Yeah, maybe that's
it. They're like, I don't get it.
Oh, maybe it's going to be that everyone is really stupid and then those guys are normal and everyone's really stupid because they rely too much on computers.
Ugh, I feel like that's what's going to be.
Ugh, what have we done?
All right. Good Lord. Objectively, there may be nothing wrong with that, but I consider it a bad sign when a grandmaster starts using Multivac for his personal problems. Any grandmaster has a certain inherent mental instability, okay, and he should be watched. Meyerhoff may be approaching a borderline beyond which we lose a grandmaster, Trask said blankly. What are you suggesting I do? You can check me. I'm too close to him to judge well, maybe. And judging humans isn't my particular talent anyway.
What?
Then why are you here?
Then why are you even talking?
What is your job,
buddy? Are they a robot? Is he?
I don't know.
Is that the big reveal? We put the human in the room. That's what one of those say. That's just the robot.
We put the human. You're a politician. It's more your talent. Judging humans, perhaps, not grandmasters.
Who talks like
that? I don't know.
Is this like, if this is public domain, then it's early. So is this like weird 30s speak?
It's stilted.
Well, it sounds like old version, like old sci-fi.
Well,
like,
how old could this be?
Well, what the computers are from World War II, right?
Yeah, okay.
All right. Anyway, they're human too. Besides, who else is to do it? The fingers of Trask's hand struck his desk in rapid succession over and over.
Oh, he's drumming.
Like a slow and muted roll of drums.
Just say he was
drumming. He's drumming his finger. Here's the thing, Asimov. Mm-hmm. We just heard you say, like, drop
not
the unnecessary
clear.
Metaphors, be clear, be concise, and yet here we are.
And yet you are just leaving us in a black hole of what the fuck this story is.
I don't trust him as a person. He's never going to text
He's
back.
A liar on paper. He's a liar at home.
I suppose I'll have to, he said. Meyerhoff said to Multivac, so now we've jumped back to Meyerhoff.
Oh, Meyerhoff,
okay.
We're back.
Oh, mm-hmm. We're back. Okay.
I'd rather be with Meyerhoff.
Jump in the paragraph.
Anyway.
Okay.
The ardent swain, picking a bouquet of wildflowers for his loved one. Yep.
The ardent swain?
Was disconcerted to find himself suddenly in the same field with a large bull of unfriendly appearance.
Wait, can you do this again, but in a Jerry Seinfeld?
I'll try.
Okay.
I lost it immediately. The ardent swain, taking a bouquet of flowers for his loved one, was disconcerted to find himself suddenly in the same field with a large bull of unfriendly appearance, which, gazing at him steadily, paved the ground in a threatening manner.
That's pretty good, Lindsay.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Do you want me to film it for your reel?
I do. Thank you. I'm trying to get on SNL with my Jerry Seinfeld impression. So, back to the joke. The young man, spying a farmer on the other side of a fairly distant fence, shouted, "Hey, mister, is that bull safe?" The farmer surveyed the situation with critical eye, spat to one side, and called back, "He's safe as anything." He spat again and added, "Can't say the same about you, though."
Ah, is that the joke?
Wait, is that the joke?
Is that the joke?
So, so he's
He needs more jokes.
He needs more jokes.
I get it.
You know
now.
What? I get why the other guy's worried. Like, I get why Trask is like, "Oh shit, he's running out of jokes."
So the joke is, "Hey, I'm stuck in a field. There's a bull. I'm scared of the bull. Hey, farmer, is that bull safe?" And he goes, "The bull is. I don't know about you."
You know what the problem is, though?
Is that a bad joke?
That tries too hard, because no one would say, "Is that bull safe?"
It is so...
He's so nihilist. It's like...
The beginning is so stilted.
Yeah.
The ardent swain.
Yeah, let's punch up this
joke. Who's the ardent swain?
It's like a runaway lover boy.
So a farmer sees a runaway lover boy at the farm, and he's like, "Hey, boy, where you going?" And the boy's like, "I don't know, where you going?" And then
the bull says, "I don't know, but I'm staying right here."
Women,
bum bum bum.
I like this because it turned into like an avant-garde jazz number.
Jokes.
Meyerhoff was about to pass it on down the list when the summons came. It wasn't really a summons. Mm. No one could summon a Grand Master. It was only a message that Division Head Trask would like very much to see Grand Master Meyerhoff, if Grand Master Meyerhoff could spare him the time. Meyerhoff might, with impunity, have tossed the message to one side and continued with whatever he was doing.
Okay.
He was not subject to discipline.
No.
On the other hand, were he to do that, they would continue to bother him. Oh, very respectfully. But they would continue to bother him. So he neutralized the pertinent circuits of Multivac and locked them into place. He put the freeze signal on his office so that no one would dare enter in his absence and started for Trask's office. Trask coughed and felt a bit intimidated by the sullen fierceness of the other's look. He said, "We have not had occasion to know one another, Grandmaster, to my great regret." "I have reported to you," said Meyerhoff stiffly. Trask wondered what lay behind those keen, wild eyes.
Okay. Ooh. This is getting interesting.
His palms itched with desire.
I ship them hard.
It was difficult for him to imagine Meyerhoff with his thin face, his dark, straight hair, his intense air.
Yeah.
Ever unbending long enough.
Ooh, he wants to bend it.
Here's the thing. He's like, "I wish that you would do what that other fucking guy just did on my desk."
His intense air ever unbending long enough to tell funny stories.
Funny.
He said, "Reports are not social, acquaintance. I have been given to understand you have a marvelous fund of anecdotes."
Good.
Oh,
neg.
My God.
Good.
These
neg.
Guys are so boring.
Yeah.
I am a jokester, sir.
Nice.
That's the phrase people use. Oh, is it? Is it the phrase people use?
Another
That's
good nag.
Not a person.
He is nagging.
Yeah, he's make him feel bad.
Yeah, they to feel
haven't
good.
Haven't used the phrase to me, Grandmaster. They have said, "The hell with them. I don't care what they've said. See here, Trask. Do you want to hear a joke?"
Oh my God!
Yay!
Trask's hard member strained against his pants. "A joke," he whispered.
He leaned forward across the desk. His eyes narrowed.
Yes.
"By all means, certainly," said Trask with an effort at heartiness.
Oh, yes. He had to try.
All right. Sweat came down his chest.
Here's the joke.
Yes.
Mrs. Jones stared at the fortune card that had emerged from the weighing machine in response to her husband's penny.
The weighing machine or the weighing machine?
Weighing.
Okay, good.
Oh, yes.
Okay. To clarify.
The weighing machine. She said, "It says here, George, that you're suave, intelligent, far-seeing, industrious, and attractive to women."
Nice.
With that, she turned the card over and added, "And they have your weight wrong, too."
Nice. That's good.
That's funny. That's funny. That's funny. That's funny. That's funny. That's funny because she dissed him.
I literally cannot remember the last two jokes. This is a good one. Yeah, I can remember. Good.
Yes, I'll remember that forever.
Trask laughed. It was almost impossible not to.
So cute.
Although the punchline was predictable, the surprising facility with which Meyerhoff had produced just the tone of contemptuous disdain in the woman's voice. You know what? I really could have used this note beforehand.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know I was supposed to be reading it in such a specific way.
Yeah. You know what? Because I think a lot of it, like 90% of his success with the jokes is like his personality and how he's delivering it.
Yeah. He's like a big character actor. Yeah. He's like a, who's like, yeah.
Yeah. He's like a.
He's like a Dane Cook.
He's like a regular
classic
Dane
Cook
here. And the cleverness with which he had contorted the lines of his face to suit that tone carried the politician helplessly into laughter.
There are so many contorting faces in this.
Yeah.
Meyerhoff said sharply, "Why is that funny?" Trask sobered.
What?
"I beg your pardon." I said, "Why is that funny? Why do you laugh?"
Oh, shit.
Negging.
Well, said Trask.
He's reneging.
Yeah. No, I think that he is building the machine to be like, why are things funny?
Ugh, this guy sucks.
Explain humor.
Also, is Trask a robot? Is he doing that like multivac shit to him right now?
I think that this is the goal of the machine to be like, please explain to me why people laugh at certain things and not at others.
Sure.
Well, said Trask, trying to be reasonable. The last line put everything that preceded in a new light. The unexpectedness. The point is, said Meyerhoff, that I have pictured a husband being humiliated by his wife, a marriage that is such a failure that the wife is convinced that her husband lacks any virtue. Yet you laugh at that. If you were the husband, would you find it funny?
Oh my God.
Going back to our background, I think it justifies what we just made up in the beginning.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I know, totally. His wife. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Cheryl. He keeps doing all these jokes about like women making men. Yeah.
These are
when it's true.
You guys, none of these are jokes. They're all true stories from his life.
Yeah, they are.
He once encountered a bull.
He did.
And he got gored by it.
And then the farmer was like, not worse. Your life is going to, something bad's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
And it
did. It did. And he's like, why is that funny?
And yet everyone keeps laughing.
Yeah. Somebody got gored. Why is that funny?
He's like, why is everybody laughing at me my entire life? Because I'm not laughing.
I am just telling you a true tale.
Am I a joke to you?
Am I the jokester?
He waited a moment in thought and then said, try this one, Trask.
Oh man, another one?
Abner was seated at his wife's sickbed, weeping uncontrollably.
Already so sad.
Yeah. Oh God, this is, this is, his wife was on her sickbed.
Yeah.
Oh, Cheryl died.
Here's the thing. She died and then she came back and she was like, I don't want to be with you.
Yeah. Yep.
She left.
She went to like heaven or hell and saw this is it. And then she came back. She's like, okay, round him up.
Yeah.
Her life flashed before her eyes and she did not like what she saw.
Gotta go.
His wife, seated at his wife's sickbed, weeping uncontrollably, when his wife, mustering the dregs of her strength, drew herself up to one elbow.
Elbow's huge. There's a motif of elbows.
You know what? Elbows are...
Abner, she whispered. Abner, I cannot go to my maker without confessing my misdeeds.
Oh, man.
Girl's gonna say something.
What's she gonna say?
Not now, muttered the stricken husband.
Okay.
Not now,
she's like,
my dear.
Okay, well, I can't later.
Lie
I'm gonna die.
Rest.
Oh, my God.
I can't, she cried. I must tell her my soul will never know peace. I've been unfaithful to you, Abner, in this very house.
Ouch.
Not
this very...
1 month ago.
Whoa! In that bed!
Hush, dear, soothed Abner.
Wow.
Like, I know right all here. About it.
Oh?
Why else have I poisoned you?
This is a joke?
That's not a joke.
All right. Trask tried desperately to maintain...
Wait, that was the joke?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. This biography.
Here, I'll end it differently so we all know it's the end of the joke.
Yeah.
Hush, dear, soothed Abner. I know all about it. Why else would I have poisoned you?
Bang, bang, bing, bong.
Can you just do that again, direct to camera?
Yes. Is it one or two? Camera one,
both.
Camera two.
Let's just do two for safety.
Trask tried desperately to maintain equanimity, but did not entirely succeed.
No, he could not laugh.
He suppressed a chuckle imperfectly.
Killing
women. Meyerhoff said, so that's funny too. Adultery, murder, all funny. Well, now, said Trask, books have been written analyzing humor. True enough, said Meyerhoff. And I've read a number of them. What's more, I've read most of them to Multivac. Still, the people who write the books are just guessing. Some of them say we laugh because we feel superior to the people in the joke. Mm-hmm. Some say it is because of a suddenly realized incongruity or sudden relief from tension or sudden reinterpretation of events. Is there any simple reason? Different people laugh at different jokes. No joke is universal. Some people don't laugh at any joke. Yet what may be most important is that man is the only animal with a true sense of humor, the only animal that laughs. Trask said suddenly, I understand. You're trying to analyze humor. That's why you're transmitting a series of jokes to Multivac. Who told you I was doing that? Never mind. It was Whistler. I remember now. He surprised me at it. Well, what about it? Nothing at all. You don't dispute my right to add anything I wish to Multivac's general fund of knowledge or to ask any question I wish? No, not at all, said Trask hastily. As a matter of fact, I have no doubt that this will open the way to new analyses of great interest to psychologists. Maybe. Just the same, there's something plaguing me that's more important than just the general analysis of humor. There's a specific question I have to ask. Two of them, really. Oh, what's that? Trask wondered if the other would answer. There would be no way of compelling him if he chose not to. But Meyerhoff said, the first question is this. Where do all these jokes come from?
What?
Like just
the joke planet. They fly the to Earth.
Well, who makes them up? Listen, about a month ago, I spent an evening swapping jokes. As usual, I told most of them.
That's what I call my nights. I'm going to spend an evening swapping jokes.
This guy is seriously no sense of humor. Okay. A month ago, I spent an evening swapping jokes. As usual, I told most of them. And as usual, the fools laughed. Maybe they really thought the jokes were funny, and maybe they were just humoring me. Mm. In any case, one creature took the liberty of slapping me on the back and saying, Meyerhoff, you know more jokes than any 10 people I know. I'm sure he was right, but it gave rise to a thought. I don't know how many hundreds or perhaps thousands of jokes I've told at one time or another in my life. Yet the fact is, I never made up one. Not one. I'd only repeated them. My only contribution was to tell them.
I feel like this is like it reminds me of like an older comic who's had a career and then one day he wakes up and he's like, what was the point?
What was
What have I done?
Am I any happier for having?
I'm not happier. I've lost my friends. I lost my family. I live a lonely life going city to city, making fun of what? What is this?
Why?
Yeah. And why do they laugh?
What does it all add up to?
Who am I? Thank Cook.
So you can take off to begin with.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
To begin with, I'd either hear them or read them. And the source of my hearing or reading didn't make up the jokes either. I've never met anyone who ever claimed to have constructed a joke. It's always, I heard a good one the other day, and heard any good ones lately? All the jokes are old. That's why jokes exhibit such a social lag. They still deal with seasickness. Oh yeah, all the jokes.
Oh, man.
For instance,
seasickness jokes.
When that's so easily prevented these days that almost no one has ever experienced it.
This has got to be Asimov. He's like, what is with all these jokes? Yeah. I hear them. Where do they come from?
Yeah.
It's like someone's still doing jokes about like the Lewinsky right now. Or like, no, what's a thing that's like, what's an old joke, right? That doesn't want to be. Just like the first season of American Idol. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Or people who still make fun of nerds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or they deal with fortune, giving weighing machines. Or they deal with fortune, giving weighing machines, like the joke I told you, when such machines are found only in antique shops. Well, then, who makes up the jokes? Trask said, is that what you're trying to find out? It was on the tip of Trask's tongue to add, good Lord, who cares?
Thank you, Trask. We're
finally
all fucking there.
We all agree.
Doing the Lord's work.
Saying what we're all thinking.
He was thinking it. He forced the impulse down. A grandmaster's questions were always meaningful. Okay. Of course, that's what I'm trying to find out. Think of it this way. It's not just that jokes happen to be old. They must be old to be enjoyed. It's essential that a joke not be original. Okay. That's one variety of humor that is or can be original, and that's the pun. I've heard puns that were obviously made up on the spur of the moment. I have made some up myself, but no one laughs at such puns. You're not supposed to. You groan. The better the pun, the louder the groan. Original humor is not laugh-provoking. Why? There's a lot of like,
I would agree though that like with jokes.
Every joke that you want to say, someone's already said it.
Yeah. There's it just like
unless it's a personal joke. Yeah. But even that's like universal. Like you go on Twitter or whatever, you search for a joke you want to say, 20 other people have said it. So why are we doing this?
Well, it's like people who they find out you're a comedian, they go, tell a joke. And it's like literally, who tells a joke?
Here's the thing. There are people that tell jokes. I've had people tell jokes at me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Because it happened a lot when I was an attorney. And attorneys love to just walk up to you and be like, hey, you hear the...
Seriously?
Yeah. And then they would tell a joke.
These
or they'd be like...
people still exist?
Yeah. No, and so, like, that kind of thing where, like, they're, like, folk jokes. Like, they're not even, like...
Yeah.
They're not...
from a joke book.
But they're like they'll tell the story as if it's a story. They'll be like, "Oh, my grandpa gave me a blah blah blah, and then it turned out to be blah, and that's like the joke."
Yeah.
And it's like, but why would you say that? You're literally just repeating something that you heard from somebody else.
So weird.
My dad does that too.
Persian culture, but like when we have parties or my parents do, or they go to some at the end of the night after dancing, it's joke time. Like people just share jokes that they've heard.
Yeah, really? Vietnamese people too.
Yeah,
it's the same jokes.
It's the same jokes.
But they just say it and then everyone laughs.
Yeah. Huh. And then sometimes it's exactly the same one joke has been said at every single party, but everyone laughs.
Mm-hmm.
No jokes. You know what? This story
is for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, immigrants.
This story is an immigrant story.
None of your neighbors are immigrant.
Is Isaac, is he?
Oh, Asimov.
Asimov. Russian? Is that what that is?
Alien?
Kentucky? Okay. Original
humor.
Either
Russia, alien, or Kentucky.
Or Tentucky. Original humor is not laugh provoking. Why? I'm sure I don't know. All right, let's find out. Having given Multivac all the information I thought advisable on the general topic of humor, I'm now feeding it a number of selected jokes. Tress found himself thoroughly intrigued. Selected? How? He asked. I don't know, said Meyerhoff. They felt like the right ones. I'm the grandmaster, you know. Oh, agreed. From those jokes and general philosophy of humor, my first request will be for the Multivac to trace the origin of the jokes, if it can. Since Whistler is in on this, and since he has seen fit to report it to you, have him down in analysis day after tomorrow. I think he'll have a bit of work to do. Certainly. May I attend to? Meyerhoff shrugged.
My invitation in the mail?
Track's attendance was obviously a matter of indifference to him. Oh, I was shipping them.
I was shipping them too.
No, but Meyerhoff's a monster, it turns out.
It's true.
It is true.
He is. Uh-huh. He is the worst. Meyerhoff has selected the last in the series with particular care. What that care consisted of, he could not have said, but he had revolved a dozen possibilities in his mind over and over again, and had tested each for some indefinable quality of meaningfulness. He said, ugh, the caveman...
ugh.
That's his name, UG, sorry. Ugh, the caveman, observed his mate running to him in tears, her leopard skin skirt in disorder.
Oh my God.
She cried, distraught. Do something quickly! A saber-toothed tiger has entered mother's cave! Do something! Ugh grunted, picked up his well-gnawed buffalo bone and said, why do anything? Who the hell cares what happens to a saber-toothed tiger?
Oh.
That's a joke.
Because the baby is scarier?
Right?
No, it's just like...
Because she says a saber-toothed tiger has entered what?
He misunderstood her because she was like, ugh, do something quickly. A saber-toothed tiger has entered the mother's cave. So maybe he's like, I killed my mom.
Oh, wait a second.
Okay. It's a mom joke.
You know what it is? No, because she's saying her mother's cave. It's a mother-in-law joke.
Because
my saber-toothed tiger is in more danger than your mom.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like the same joke as the bull joke.
Yeah. You know what?
He sucks.
He does suck. He does like say things over and over. Okay, so It was... Guys, I'm getting really into it.
It's cool.
It was then that Meyerhoff asked his two questions and leaned back, closing his eyes. I don't know if he does that at the same time, I guess. He was done. I saw nothing absolutely wrong, said Trask to Whistler. He told me that he was doing readily enough. It was odd, but legitimate. What he claimed he was doing, said Whistler. Even so, I can't stop a grandmaster on opinion alone. He seemed queer, but after all, grandmasters are supposed to seem queer. I don't think him insane. He loves him.
Yeah, he loves him.
Using Multivac to find the source of jokes, muttered the senior analyst in discontent. How's that not insane? How can we tell? Asked Trask, irritable. This is Trask to me. Science has advanced to a point where the only meaningful questions left are ridiculous ones. The sensible ones have been thought of, asked, and answered long ago.
It is of no use. I'm bothered.
Maybe there's no choice now, Whistler. We'll see Meyerhoff, and you can do the necessary analysis of Multivac's response, if any. As for me, my only job is to handle the red tape. Good Lord. I don't even know what a senior analyst such as yourself is supposed to do except analyze, and that doesn't help me any. They are flipping out. These two are a fun duo.
They're fun. They're like,
they're the odd couple.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Very odd couple.
Yeah. Whistler said, it's simple enough. A grandmaster like Meyerhoff asks questions, and Multivac automatically formulates it into quantities and operations. The necessary machinery to converting words to symbols is what makes up most of the bulk of Multivac. Let me do that again. The necessary machinery of converting words to symbols is what makes up most of the bulk of Multivac. Multivac then gives the answers and quantities and operations, but it doesn't translate that back into words, except in most simple and routine cases. If it were designated to solve the general retranslation problem, its bulk would have been quadrupled at least. Guys, he talks too much.
Oh my God. Here's the thing.
I was waiting for you to finish, but I was going to be like, that is so fucking boring.
Just go to sleep.
Isaac. Yeah.
Isaac.
You're
Isaac.
Showing, Isaac.
Yeah. We can see you.
We can see you. You're every character.
Yeah. Yes, no, he absolutely is.
It's
everyone.
Like Aaron Sorkin writes himself in every character. Yeah. This is what Isaac's doing.
Isaac. Isaac said to Isaac.
Yeah, one man talking to himself.
Uh-huh. I see. Then it's your job to translate these symbols into words?
My job and that of other analysts.
He's a bro to me now.
Yeah.
We use smaller, specially designed computers whenever necessary.
Whistler smiled grimly. Like the Delphic priestess of ancient Greece.
Cool. Cool.
Multivac gives oracle and obscure answers. We only have translators, you see.
What?
So I guess I hate it when bros throw around references to ancient Greece. Oracle.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So I guess they were walking and talking because it said they had arrived.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they were walking and talking.
They were doing
it was Aaron Sorkin.
They were
totally doing.
Yeah.
Meyerhoff was waiting.
Uh-huh.
Whistler said briskly,
what circuits did you use, Grandmaster?
Meyerhoff told him, and Whistler went to work. Why aren't you like, he's like, some places he's very, like, he explains a lot, and he gives all the dry, and then at some big points, it's just Meyerhoff told him, and Whistler went off. Okay.
Very inconsistent.
Trask tried to follow what was happening, but none of it made sense. The government official watched a spool unreel with a pattern of dots and endless incomprehensibility. Grandmaster Meyerhoff stood indifferently to one side. He's playing hard to get.
Yeah, I know. He's trying to be cool. He's like, I don't even care. Yeah. I don't even care what's happening.
I'm going to be over here.
While Whistler surveyed the pattern as it emerged, the analyst had put on headphones and a mouthpiece at intervals murmured a series of instructions, which, at some far-off place, guided assistants through electronic contortions in other computers.
We do not care how it works.
In five
Get
words.
To the fucking what? Point.
Some other place, there's a building, there's like a bunch of other people, they're doing some stuff.
Yeah.
Occasionally, Whistler listened, then punched combinations on a complex keyboard marked with symbols that look vaguely mathematical, but weren't. A good deal more than an hour elapsed.
Okay.
The frown on Whistler's face grew deeper.
He's smoldering.
Once he looked up at the other two and began, this is unbelievable. And he turned back to his work. I don't know what.
Oh.
Finally, he said hoarsely.
Oh, he's thirsty.
I can give you an unofficial answer. His eyes were red-rimmed. They look raw somehow.
Ooh.
The official answer awaits complete analysis. Do you want it unofficial? Go ahead, said Meyerhoff. Trask nodded. Whistler darted a hangdog glance. What does that mean?
Hangdog glance?
He's like, oh, geez. Yeah, like, oh, boy.
Like sad puppy.
Poor Whistler. Whistler, no, no, that's the bro.
No, Whistler, yeah. Not poor, yeah. Whistler.
Whistler darted a hangdog glance at the Grandmaster.
Ask a foolish question, he said.
Thran gruffly. Multivac says extraterrestrial origin. What are you saying? Demanded Trask.
Don't you hear me? The jokes we laugh at were not made up by men.
What? Boom, boom, boom. Everybody say ayo.
What? They were fucking aliens?
We come from the planet, jokester.
Multivac has analyzed all the data given it, and the one answer that best fits that data is that some extraterrestrial intelligence has composed the jokes.
Kidding me?
All of them immigrants. And yes. Place them in, you know, selected human minds.
This is some, like, white bullshit.
That's
the,
right.
Like, ancient aliens bullshit, uh-huh. Where it's like, aliens built the pyramids, yeah, not brown people.
Also, right? Jokes.
And place, so, extraterrestrial aliens have... put them in selected minds at selected times and places.
What?
In such a way that no man is conscious of having made one up.
What?
All subsequent jokes are minor variations and adaptations of these grand originals.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
This makes total sense to me.
Isaac? Isaac. Well, because also, though, why are they all the same?
How is it? Every story we read on this podcast is like, going along, going along, going along, get to the end. What?
You know, like, he has, like, a pitch book or something, and he's just like, what if jokes are aliens? Like, that's what this is.
Yeah.
What if, like, no one even made up a joke? Yeah. What if, like, humor was from aliens?
Yeah, what if us laughing is an unnatural response to being in proximity to alien data?
What if we're all sleeper agents of laughter?
What if our laughter is just giving our DNA to the sun? This is not in the book right now. Okay. Meyerhoff broke in, face flushed with a kind of triumph only a grandmaster who once again asked the right questions could know. Oh, this is good. Everybody who's a comedy writer, listen.
Pay attention. Okay.
All comedy writers, he said.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Pay attention. Pay attention.
Work by twisting old jokes to new purposes. That's well known. The answer fits. But why? Asked Trask.
Why make up the jokes?
He turned into a chipmunk.
Multivest said Whistler, that the only purpose that fits all the data is that the jokes are intended to study human psychology.
Nice.
You know, we study rat psychology by making the rats solve mazes. The rats don't know why and wouldn't even know what was going on, which they're not.
These outer intelligences study man's psychology by noting individual reactions to clearly selected anecdotes. Each man reacts differently. Presumably, these outer intelligences are to us what we are to rats.
Okay, I know I was making fun of this before, but I'm
never going to laugh at anything again.
I'm not letting them take my DNA.
No.
I'm laughing now. The sun to have my DNA.
If I ever go see, or if I ever do stand up or see a stand up, I'm just going to yell out, this has been done. An alien.
You're playing into their plan. You're a rat. You're a rat in a maze.
You're an algorithm spewing out words. Trask, eyes staring, said, the Grandmaster said man was the only animal with a sense of humor. It would seem then that the sense of humor is foisted upon us from without.
Why are they all believing this right now?
So fast.
Instantly.
They're like a computer told us.
Yeah, that's why.
So it must be true.
Computers we can't trust.
Is it a fucking joke? Is it a fucking joke?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
Page 14 of 15. Page 14 of 15.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Who knows?
On the edge of my seat.
Okay, fuck, 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 fuck. Okay, okay.
Meyerhoff added excitedly, and for possible humor created from within, we have no laughter. Puns, I mean. It's so weird because there wasn't a quote to begin it, so I'm not really sure what he said. Okay. And for possible human created from within, we have no laughter. Puns, I mean. Whatever. Whistler said, presumably the extraterrestrials cancel out the reaction to spontaneous jokes to avoid confusion.
Whoa. Wow. He does not believe in improv.
No, he also. No, he does not. And he also. Asimov has a bone to pick with puns.
Yes.
He hates puns.
Or possible other theory, he makes a lot of pun jokes.
No one laughs.
And he's like, it's because it's turned off.
Aliens.
It must be because aliens don't want you to laugh at my joke.
That's You're how programmed. Works. You're programmed.
Yeah. Like, you would if it weren't for aliens.
Sheeple.
I'm the funniest boy. Trask said in sudden agony of spirit.
Oh, God.
Come on now. Good Lord. Do either of you believe this?
Oh, thank you, Trask.
Yes. The senior analyst looked at him coldly. Multivac said so. It's all that can be done so far. It is pointed out that real jokesters of the universe, and if we want to know more.
Oh, my God, no.
The matter will have to be followed up, he added to a whisper, if anyone dares to follow it up.
I mean, I guess I would dare.
Do you guys want to start an improv team called Jokesters of the Universe?
Yes.
But are we really the jokesters?
No, we're not. No.
Extraterrestrials are.
This is why women aren't funny.
No, this is why. We are aliens.
The only alien. Put it in men's brains.
Yeah, what happened to the secretary? Okay, well.
I miss her. I miss her. God bless.
She's great.
Grandmaster Meyerhoff said suddenly, I asked two questions, you know. Oh. So far, the first one's been answered. I think Multivac has had enough data to answer the second.
Oh, my God.
Whistler shrugged. He seemed like a half-broken man.
Ouch. Poor Whistler.
He's freaking the fuck out. He's like, well, the computer said that we're rats, so I guess we are.
When a grandmaster thinks there is enough data, he said, I'll make book on it. What is your second question?
Nice.
I ask this. What will be the effect of the human race to discover the answer to my first question?
Oh, shit.
Okay.
Why did you ask that? Demanded Travis.
Because of your reaction in this moment.
Baby hungry.
Just a feeling that it had to be asked, said Meyerhoff. Travis said, insane. It's all insane. And he turned away. Even he felt strangely, and Whistler had changed sides. Whistler, who had originally cried insanity, now believed implicitly, and Trask could not bring himself to. Trask closed his eyes. He might cry insanity all he wished, but no man in 50 years had doubted the combination of a grandmaster and Multivac and doubted his and found his depths verified. Whistler worked silently, teeth clenched. He put Multivac and its subsidiary machine through their paces again. Another hour passed, and he laughed harshly.
An hour? This is the world's most advanced computer. It needed an hour.
It needed an hour.
To process data.
It was 1960.
I mean, hey.
Here's the thing.
He couldn't see that far into the future.
The computer took like 8 rooms up. It was like so.
Yeah.
They had no idea.
But back then, we didn't know.
We didn't know. We were like, oh, okay, an hour. That's fine.
This is a nightmare. A raving nightmare. What's the answer? Asked Meyerhoff. Meyerhoff. I want Multivac's remark, not yours. Damn.
Yeah, wow. Ouch.
Place.
All right, take it. Multivac states that once even a single human discovers the truth of this method of psychological analysis the human mind, it will become useless as an objective technique to those extraterrestrial powers now using it.
Oh, so jokes aren't going to work anymore? Jokes aren't funny?
Yeah. You mean that there won't be any more jokes handed out to humanity? Asked Trask faintly. Or what do you mean? No more jokes! No more jokes, said Whistler. Now! Multivac says now! The experiment is ending now! A new technique will have to be introduced! They stared at each other. The minutes.
Minutes?
Passed.
Oh no.
Meyerhoff said slowly, Multivac is right. Whistler said haggardly,
I know.
Even Trask said in a whisper, yes, it must be.
What?
It was Meyerhoff who put his finger on the proof of it. Meyerhoff, the accomplished jokester. He said, it's over, you know. It's all over. I've been trying for 5 minutes now and I can't think of one single joke. Not
God.
One.
Are you kidding?
Oh my God.
And if I read one in a book, I wouldn't laugh. I know.
Oh my God.
The gift of humor is gone, said Trask. Drearily. No man will ever laugh again. As they remained there, staring, feeling the world shrink down to the dimensions of an experimental rat cage, with the maze removed and something about to be put in its place.
Oh my god.
Boom, boom, boom. Everybody's Damn.
Oh my god. That
was
okay.
Dumb.
Okay.
I mean, let's break it down.
Okay.
Let's.
So,
all right.
There were certain, like, there were kernels that I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then it just kept going left. You know what I mean? Or turning right. Yes. Or like, it wasn't. Is
Douglas Adams. Sure. Are you familiar?
Yes.
Love him.
Very funny writer.
Great. Went to his grave recently.
Nice. How was it?
It was in London. It says number 42 on it. And then people put like all these other trinkets around
it. That's very sweet.
I was going to make a 42 joke. Is that that was going to be the answer to the second question? No, not then. I mean when you were
reading. Jokes are over now.
Here's the thing. I can't think of anything.
I can't.
Because everything
I was going to say it before, but I can't say it now because it's not real.
If you were to say it, you would not laugh.
I was just going to say, I feel like he read this story and went, you know what? Let me take this style, put it in the hands of a funny person.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
And that's how we got his writing style. Because it is like sort of heightened and ridiculous like that, except actually funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I did enjoy it. I like stories like this that just make you think, like in a world where
like you're entering into a computer.
When we are an experiment. But I feel like, first of all, he needed some joke punch-ups, like for sure.
Yeah.
More like tension between some of the characters. And I feel like he had maybe a word limit, and so he rushed the end to like get to it. But I thought it was intriguing. I was engaged.
I thought it was intriguing.
I was warm.
And here's what I think it is. It's kind of similar to, and it's weird because we've been bringing up Vonnegut a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
But he reminded me of like that character, Kilgore Trout, where it was like, if you were just to like tell me the idea of this, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
But then like the execution and the prose of it was like weird and like confusing.
Stilted.
Yeah.
And the jokes just needed to be tighter.
It was an interesting, I was certainly engaged. I was like, where is this going?
Yes, we're interested.
I was like, dang, which of them is coming alien?
Next? Yeah.
But the execution of it, it's like, it's too bad you aren't funny or this could have really been something.
But, you know, maybe, you know, comedy is subjective.
Maybe we're not
as audience, you know? We're not the men who have cave women wives or people who poison their wives or farmers or
own bulls.
Yeah, but they all have universal problems in them.
Yeah.
You know, comedy is just universal jokes and different adjectives and verbs.
Well,
that's what comedy
aren't
is.
There only, multi-vac recognizes. Yeah.
Aren't there only like three things you can write a joke about? And it's like love. Mm. And then two other things.
Death and taxes.
Yeah,
there you go.
Those are the three things.
Yeah, that's all I know.
And that's it.
That's all.
My tax jokes, so good. But now I'm realizing, been said before.
Yeah, been said before. And now that you know it, even if you were to say one, you wouldn't laugh.
Yeah, wow. That's, well, yeah, it's so weird in comedy.
It's a very funny story or ending to the story because he's like, there are only two types of jokes.
Yeah.
Written ones and puns. That's all there is. No one has ever in the history of humankind just been funny off the cuff. Uh-uh. Doesn't exist.
Physical humor. No.
Doesn't exist. Like, he has never just laughed at somebody coming up with something funny on the spot.
Yes.
Never.
You know what? He needs to take a UCB. He needs to take an ASCAT and then his mind blown and then get obsessed and realize he needs to do more with his life.
Yes. Yeah. And then go through all of the classes and then move on.
Yeah. Here's another Aaron Sorkin thing. Like, I feel like he is an Aaron Sorkin of his time because Aaron Sorkin did like Studio 60?
Yeah.
His version of doing comedy. And
it
just didn't work.
It doesn't work.
We
it doesn't
don't want to see you doing comedy.
Because you can't. You're a funny writer.
Yeah.
But not when you write about comedy because you take it way too seriously.
I think that is super true for Asimov because like there are times in his
really
books
apt comparison
where you can kind of just be like, huh.
Mm.
But and I think he got one good note and he was like, oh, I'm a comedy writer.
Yeah. And you know when he like wrote those four jokes that he did, he just like, boom, I'm going to take a walk around the block.
Yeah.
I'm a big boy.
Ooh, rest those fingies. Yeah.
Or he's like, I'm fucking sick of jokes. You fucking weirdos with your stupid, unfunny jokes. I'm going to show you. You didn't even come up with those.
Yeah.
You didn't come up with those and they're not funny. And as soon as I tell you that they're not funny, it'll stop. I'm going to change the world.
Yeah, he would be so annoying right now.
Yeah, he'd be so annoying right now.
He'd be so fucking insufferable.
Hot take. I'm so glad he's dead.
No, me too. You know what? Rest in pieces.
Rest in peace. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is he dead? I imagine if he's 1920, he could still be alive.
Not too long ago.
Okay. This is, I'm going to do my.
Yeah, I am fascinated to know. Did he have.
Oh, wait, no. We had the bio. He died in, remember? He died at age 1929.
Nine. He died at nine. So that makes sense.
He died in 92. That's recent, though.
Yeah.
I mean, not internet recent, but like recent. But
I was actually thinking it was more recent, but.
He saw Pretty Woman.
He saw Pretty Woman.
Yeah. So and he's lived.
You know what? When Richard Gere clapped that jewelry box down on Julia Roberts' hand, he did not laugh.
No. He was like, aliens!
Yeah.
That's a pun! They put that in your head!
Well, thank you so much for coming on and doing this show.
It was so much fun.
Really fun to have you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
You know, I'm around if you need me. I'm online at Mujan Z. I do not like social media, but I'm working on it. So if my Twitter is not deactivated.
Good for you. Good
for you. It's at Mujan Z, but also it might be, and I have zero followers because I totally deleted it. It's a long story.
Oh my God.
Working on getting back. and I perform around the city, but I'm sure, God, I'm really bad at promoting myself. Just like I'm around, just Google my name.
Okay.
Googler.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Public Domain Theater. If you're enjoying what you hear, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you do, we're going to give you a shout out as thank you. So go and do that if you're so inclined. And in the meantime, keep it lit.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.